Welcome to Mustard Mayonnaise. I am Matt.
I'm Richard.
And apparently my voice is of questionable quality today. I didn't even know that. I just learned that.
Do you have a cold or something?
No. Well, maybe. Who knows? It's been a long couple of weeks.
Yeah.
50-hour weeks at work, and they're just sucking out the will to live. Hopefully ending soon. All right, so we discuss things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest. Movies, video games, DVDs, TV, branding, little media, whatever.
Yep.
So this show will feature Oscar nomination discussions, few other random thoughts.
My 1,000th DVD.
Well, I was building to that.
Oh, sorry.
Richard, our special celebration of Richard's DVD collection, and you know what? Is your paper list around? I know it's not up to date.
I'll pull it out. I think it fell behind some of those DVDs. I'll go grab it.
You'll have to vamp while I look for it.
Okay.
And
and also, without even remotely breaking my what do they call that? The when you go do something and you're not supposed to talk about it later.
NDA.
Yeah, NDA. Without breaking a non-disclosure agreement, I was told I can talk about the fact that I participated in a play taste. Testing.
Play tasting.
a play testing, but I promise I will absolutely not break my non-disclosure agreement.
I have seen you break NDAs at the drop of a hat.
I'm talking about actually in public on a podcast.
Uh-huh.
It's not behind there? No, check the one below that. The row below that.
I'm curious to reach behind these. It's like when that old Flash Gordon movie with the creature.
Oh, man, I thought it was bad. If you're not seeing it there, it's not there, dude. I'm sorry. I thought it was back.
Oh
there.
Well, I'll.
We can ramble about them.
As well as the debut of a new feature here on Mustard Mayonnaise, which I'm very excited about. Mm-hmm. But we'll get to that later. So I don't know. I didn't really bring a list.
The Oscars. I'll pull it up.
I thought I had some other stuff I wanted to. You know what? Let's do some video games first. Okay. Before we dive into that.
Sweet.
I'm about 4 missions away from being done with Test Drive Unlimited.
Oh, really?
Well, you know, the Xbox died for, you know, it was out of my possession for a couple of weeks while it went through the replacement process. I got it back, and I Test Drive Unlimited, and I got up to the pro level.
Yep.
And I realized, I have bought everything you can buy and get an achievement for.
Yeah.
I've driven over 1,000 miles, so basically I've reached all the achievements that were within reason of achieving.
Yep.
And now the remaining achievements will take me forever, because they're like the next iteration of driving is 5,000 miles.
Yeah, you and I pretty much ended at the same point you did, and it was, and the things that were the achievements like that I was at were, yeah, the 5,000 miles, also the drive every spot on the island, and I literally have driven 50% of the spots, but I swear that took me like 100 hours. So I don't, and just finding the other spots, they don't make it exactly easy to, I mean, they do kind of like with the GPS unit, but really it's incredibly easy to miss entire spots, and you find yourself pulling off, driving off freeway exits just to highlight one little stretch of road.
Well,
and it's crazy.
I went through a little up and down period of, you know what, that would be kind of cool just to do that, and you know, because there I feel like I've hit all the roads in the major cities, and really all that's left are some of the outlying roads. And then, you know, randomly you zoom in on what you thought was a desolate area, and you're like, oh look, there's a whole other grid there. I'm
sorry, go ahead.
And then I back, and I'm like, you know what? If I'm homesick, that would be a good mindless activity.
Well, that's kind of what I did. I spent like a half a day, actually probably a whole day just doing that and not getting anywhere. Have you done the, what is it? The Around the Island Challenge?
Nope.
And some of these other ones? I did that one, which takes an hour, and it's like pretty heavy concentration for a whole hour. There was one that I did, and it was, and I screwed up at the last minute on one because I was, because 55 minutes into it, I started getting police tailing me.
Oh.
And you can't win, you can't end it when you have like 3 stars after it, which sucked. So I did it all again and did it in plenty of time. You just have to have either using the one of the motorcycles or the, like the Koenigsegg, car. But I did that one and a couple others. But it turns out once you get to a certain level, There's like all kinds of other super challenges that I can't even compete against.
Yeah,
I mean,
and
too
it's
hard.
I'm not that good in the races, honestly. Yeah. The single player races, I have bumbled my way through, I think, up to winning 20 or whatever. Their servers suck.
Yeah.
That quote unquote TDU servers, at least, I don't know if it's my connection or what, but they're always down.
Yeah.
So the one time I tried to do a multiplayer race, it failed.
Yep.
And I just, so I've accomplished none of the multiplayer racer achievements. Or two, really.
Yeah.
So I've got like 4 missions and I will have done like 30 missions, quote unquote. And after that, like the next step is 50 and it's,
Yeah.
So I'm almost done and I can return to you, Test Drive Unlimited.
Okay. Well, speaking of video games, maybe I'll talk about my experience yesterday with Microsoft.
That sounds creepy.
I mean, I didn't say Microsoft, just playtesting in general. But I did playtesting, and I won't talk about the game so much as the experience. It was funny because it was like all guys. First of all the people running it generally were women, but it was all guys in this crew, and you got the distinct impression that's exactly what they expected. And it was... what struck me as weird about it was so mechanical how they broke down basically fun into its component parts. And it was weird. None of us talked at all. I don't know what the reason was. I know we weren't supposed to talk about playtesting, but we basically went in and we sat around for 30 minutes waiting, and they had like this old beat up copy. It was weird, this beat up copy of Star Wars that they're running on a loop, and like they had all 3 versions of Star Wars, and it looked like somebody had duped off of a VHS copy, an old, like those when they spiffed up the graphics in 98,
yeah.
The old version, and they'd put it on, you know, in their somehow in their network, just put up this copy because it was a horrible copy of it. And they just playing a loop, and guys went in there and nobody said a word. They just sat there and watched Star Wars or did nothing. It was the weirdest thing. No joking, no talking. Anyway, so then we went and did the play testing, which again, I won't talk about the game other than it was a multi, you know, as a many people participating in the same game. Not unlike Halo, but it was definitely not Halo. And I realized as participant I've played those before. I'm not really a huge fan of that because I'm more of a going through a mission kind of person. Uh-huh. And this did nothing to change my attitude towards it. Although it was still kind of fun, but it was weird. Like you'd play something, then you'd immediately stop and answer very specific questions. Why was this fun? Why was this not fun? And it sort of like, I realized how hard it is to articulate why something was fun. And anyway, so that it was basically that. And then when it was everything was said and done, you were able to get a couple pieces of software, and they didn't have a great selection, but it was okay. And I managed to get another copy of Gears of War, since my first one is getting like what everybody else is getting, that disc unreadable error. Anyway, so it was interesting. It was just sort of a bunch of people that were sort of felt bored and indifferent, not like the old days of playtesting, where it's, wow, we're actually testing games and how cool is this and everything else. And here it was like a lot of people who clearly done it a lot of times before, and it was just sort of there.
I did that, God, how many years ago? I was called in to playtest twice. Mm-hmm. Once they sent me home because they had enough people, and boy, was that irritating.
Yeah, that would be maddening.
And the other one, I went in, it was for an original Xbox game, which... I won't say what it was, even though I think we were clear to discuss it after it was released, but I honestly can't remember the name of it.
We were never clear to discuss it, ever, apparently.
I'm not going to, because I don't feel like getting in trouble, because I'm fuzzy on what I signed.
Yep.
But I will say that the experience itself, it was a fairly standard... a very generic game, like a 3D go-through, jump around, collect... a power up, whether it's a piece of fruit or a coin or whatever, you know, bash bad guys. It was more of a cartoony than it was a realistic thing. And it was interesting because I sucked at it.
Yeah.
Everyone else was advancing much further. And I realized during the debrief that they had reached areas. I'm like, what are you talking about? I didn't get there. Cause I couldn't get past basically the first stage.
Yeah.
And so it's less fun when you suck at it.
Yeah.
or the game, and then you're right, and then we'd have to answer through a web interface questions about the game. And it was interesting because it was like, did you feel like you could jump far enough?
Yeah.
Could you jump too far? And it's weird. I never thought about that before.
Yep.
And as a game designer, you do have to figure that out. How powerful should a bullet be? How much, how accurate should a bullet be? Which, that's understandable, but jumping?
Yeah.
Like, they put effort into how high and how far and how responsive a jump should be.
Yeah,
it's astounding.
In this particular case, it was exactly the same web interface, and I ended up, first of all, I was not nowhere near as good as other people. I wasn't bad, but I was just not as good, and that was frustrating because there's people there who clearly had a lot of experience in this type of game and would smoke some of us and just not do well. But when it was all over, it was kind of funny because my experience was when it was over, they're going, okay, well, we'll usher you guys into a focus group room, but they had enough people already in the focus group room, so they just said, okay, well, you're free to go. And I'm like, normally I love giving my opinion, but at that point I was like, okay, good, because I just didn't feel like I had that much of an opinion to give, although it was a fun experience, and I can see this being a really successful game, but it was an interesting experience, and it's weird to sit down and commit 6 hours or 8 hours of your life
Hell, mine was like an hour and a half.
Well, this was a game where the beginning of it, you had to go through the training because it's complex to learn all this stuff. And then the second part of the day, which was like 3 hours, it was just playing the game with others. And that was why it was, took so long. So, and then there was like pizza in the middle.
Well, so. It was interesting because during the debrief, it was clear that some of the developers and programmers were in there.
Yeah.
They weren't hidden behind an interrogation mirror.
Yep.
That they're taught, showing you some of the art slides and this is what we envision, and then you turn into this thing. And I think the one thing I actually raised my hand to say was I didn't see yes, you can turn into this thing. I didn't see why you would want to. There was no motivation to other than you could.
Yeah.
I didn't feel compelled to. I didn't feel that I had to. And that was my one piece of input. It was interesting seeing their reactions to, did you like it? Did you not like it? And I think the game came out maybe like as much as a year later.
Yeah.
And it was not a name brand game, let's just say that. You wouldn't recognize it even if I remembered the name.
Watching or participating in this, it reminded me of when I played Half-Life 2, their expansion pack. And then after you're done playing it, you could go back again and have the developer's commentary. I think I told you about that, where you go through it and then they have like a little question mark and you can highlight it and the game will stop and they'll describe what they're doing here. And it was honestly the most fascinating thing I ever heard, because they're saying, well, at this point here, we went through a lot of game testing, and what we were trying to get across here, we actually had a monster come here early and it turned out it didn't work because it didn't do this. And you realized how much thought they did in that. And I'm more into that, into a single person playthrough game, but still, anyway, it was an interesting experience. I definitely look forward to doing it again, although I would hope it would end up being in a game that I'm more into,
Well,
somehow I got to get on Valve's playtesting team.
I was over at a friend's house who has the who's running the beta of Shadowrun.
Yeah.
Which the big deal with that is that you can both Xbox 360 players and PC players can participate at the same time.
Yep.
That's its big thing.
Yep.
So he's playing it, and he had to sign an NDA, and apparently you're allowed to say you're beta testing it. But that's it. You're not allowed to give your impressions of it at all.
Yeah.
And so, he let me watch it, and I'm watching it, and I was thinking, well, that's such an odd restriction.
I know.
He probably wasn't allowed to have me look at it.
Yeah.
So I'm certainly not going to get him in trouble or anything. But in looking at it and thinking about that restriction, it was bizarre because this is horrible. I haven't really articulated my thoughts.
Well, if they're letting people like do beta at home, basically beta testing it like that, then they're pretty much knowing everybody's going to talk about it. But still, it is weird.
And they're not doing anything special enough to warrant secrecy levels.
Yeah.
I can understand if you don't want people bad mouthing the game ahead of time.
Well,
That's the
thing, especially about games like that and Halo and whatever. It's all about, and especially like Battlefield, it's how It's how they do the balance. And during beta testing, balances are off. You know, this thing is too powerful, this is that. And I don't blame them for not wanting to have anybody, quote, evaluate the game until it's done.
I didn't play it. He offered to let me play, and I was like, eh. To me, actually, the graphics weren't that good.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's just the level. Maybe it wasn't a final render. Obviously, if it's beta, everything's up in the air.
Yep.
Anyway, it was just kind of a big shrug. And what was the other thing I was going to mention that was related to that? Oh, the couple of weeks ago when a few screenshots of the Halo 3 beta leaked out.
Yeah, I was like, holy crapola.
And, because they're beta testing it. I know that they're beta testing it internally at Microsoft. If you work at Microsoft, I think you're allowed to beta test, because I have a friend that works there.
Yeah, it's like hundreds of people.
I was checking to see who was online, and it says he's playing Pimps at Sea, which is like their ha-ha joke code name for it.
Yep.
On the Xbox Live service. And I sent him a little message. I'm like, Pimps at Sea, ? What, WTF, F you. I was jealous. But actually, in thinking about it, I'm not that jealous of someone playing a beta of something.
Yeah.
It'd be cool, but it's like, I'm going to play the final game anyway. It doesn't really matter to me if I play it 2 months ahead of other people.
Yep.
I
don't know. I like doing it. The difference with me is that if it's a game it's like a mission single player, I don't want to play a beta of that. But if it's a multiplayer game where you're playing against each other, absolutely, I want to play a beta. I want to be part of that. Just like watching Little Miss Sunshine 2 months before everybody else got to see it.
Well, no, that's a little different internally to me.
Yeah.
But the thing about Halo 3 beta testing, and specifically Microsoft beta testing, they run unique. It's like a closed caption thing that's embedded over the screen with a unique ID numbers.
Yeah.
So if you take a picture of it or a screen grab, you have this unique ID number that's right over the gameplay.
Yep.
I don't know if it's right in the middle or towards the bottom or if you crop it out. I don't know if that's possible. Certainly you can Photoshop and fuzz it out. But by then in theory, they've done it like a watermark so that you're destroying anything that would be of value to look at anyway.
Well, it's sort of like they would do that with a lot of Academy Award ones, but it's often not unique though.
Yeah, but this, there's unique ID numbers. So if you post a screenshot, they know exactly who that came from. Yeah, so you have to be a complete moron to either post something yourself or allow a friend to have taken a photo. Now, clearly, if you went to the bathroom and your friend's a jerk and you didn't know, there's a bit of leeway there.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it is your responsibility. You sign the NDA. You know that there's a unique identifier that is traced back to you, and you're in trouble. Your friends need to be cool enough to leave in the room with that.
Yep.
And someone clearly wasn't doing their job.
Yep.
And it's like, how stupid do you have to be? Microsoft in about 30 seconds will crush you.
Yep.
That's about. Although I as I'm flipping through a Rolling Stone here, I see my new favorite ad from Sony. Have you seen this ad?
No.
It's a double page spread, and they're doing it in multiple publications. And basically, it's an ad for a Blu-ray player presenting the only Blu-ray disc product made by people who make movies and music and games and computers. So it's like they're showing an assembly line on a movie lot, but there's all this stuff going on. There's like computer workers on it.
There's
green screen workers. And essentially the idea is, look at all this synergy we've got going.
Yeah.
But you're right, it's a mess.
Jesus.
It's a disaster.
My brother got his PlayStation last week. I went buy him a gift certificate for his birthday. And it was at some like little game crazy outlet in Mary's Smoky Point, Washington. And they've got like 10 PlayStations just sitting there, gathering dust. It's pretty sad. I'll tell you, looking at the unit, he didn't play a game on it, but just looking at the unit, it's kind of ugly. It looks like it's supposed to be sleek, but when it's sitting down on its side looking out, it looks ugly. It doesn't look as unified as the Xbox 360 does to me. I was surprised at that it's ugly. But anyway, I'm sure the games are fun.
Well, I think What you mean to say is the games might be fun in the future.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, so I think that covers video games. Let's do Oscars. Let's talk about movies on our
podcast. Okay, well, I can go down the list of some of the list. Best Picture.
So, hold on. My thinking is, as you go down the list, we just briefly riff on whatever we want to, and then we're done.
Best Picture was, Best Picture, I'll go the five. It's Departed, Little Miss Sunshine, The Queen, Bobble, and Letters from Iwo Jima. And I've only seen two of those.
I think, and of course, everyone's big reaction is Dreamgirls wasn't nominated for Best Picture, which I'm fine with. I saw Little Miss Sunshine, and I believe, and The Departed. So I've seen two,
What's weird about all these nominations is they're so all over the map that it almost... It completely does not allow any... I mean, it's clearly going to be a year when a lot of movies win in individual categories, so it seems like something I would have never thought before. It seems to me almost likely that Little Miss Sunshine is going to win Best Picture.
Could be.
And the reason I say that is because there's no other favorites anywhere else, other ones sort of nobody's really thinking it's Clint Eastwood's year again. So you're thinking Martin Scorsese's going to win for Best Director, and you're thinking Helen Mirren's going to win for The Queen, and maybe Little Miss Sunshine becomes like the Annie Hall of 2007.
Here's my fear about that: that suddenly there's a Little Miss Sunshine backlash, and all the and you get like what happened with Shakespeare in Love, where the knives are out, and it's just like, oh my God, it didn't deserve to win, and it snuck in, and it's fluffy, and
that's after the fact.
Yeah,
because that's. But I agree. But the thing about that one, I mean, that might happen. But the complete difference in this case and that case is that was entirely attributed, Jesus, I'm on drugs. I won't even try to say it again, to Weinstein and their pressure. And that was, and boy, Steven Spielberg was so upset because he was convinced it was going to be Saving Private Ryan, and it probably should have been, but it was all due to Weinstein and Harvey Weinstein and his machine at the time, which has never been that successful again. Little Miss Sunshine will almost certainly, if it win somewhat on its merits and the weird competition it has that's all over the map. But I agree, there might be, because with Little Miss Sunshine, I really liked it. I bought the DVD and liked it, but it's hard for me to picture me saying it was the best film of last year, because I've seen so many great films. United 93, in a lot of respects, I think is a better film, even though it didn't get nominated for Best Picture. Mm-hmm. Pan's Labyrinth, I think, in many ways, is a better film. And my probably favorite movie of all last year was Children of Men, and it didn't get nominated. So anyway, director is Scorsese, Stephen Frears for The Queen, Paul Greengrass for United 93, that Alejandro Gonzalez Inarritu for Bobble, and Clint Eastwood.
I would say, I hope, boy, between Martin Scorsese and Paul Greengrass, I don't know who I want to win, because I think both did an amazing job, and certainly Scorsese, you know, the whole talk of he's never won it before, and clearly there's going to be history incorporated into decision making. Like, maybe he didn't do a better job directing The Departed than Paul Greengrass did with United 93, but combined with him being denied all those other years, all of that.
That's what I'm assuming is going to happen. That said, he did a really great job. The Departed was
I agree.
Different than other movies.
And if
he
wins, it's definitely earned and not just.
But United 93 is such a supremely well made movie.
Exactly. Very difficult.
So, best actor, Will Smith. Leonardo DiCaprio.
Hold on, which DiCaprio? You have to specify the DiCaprio.
Blood
role.
Diamond.
Uh-huh.
Forrest Whitaker for Last King of Scotland. Ryan Gosling for Half Nelson. Peter O'Toole for Venus. And everybody's assuming it'll be Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah, that seems to be the
this given. Yeah. You know, it's funny. Forrest Whitaker, I've seen him. He's been around for a very long time. And when you see him in interviews, he seems like a private person who doesn't play any Hollywood games and is a very committed actor to the point that he can be challenging on the set and other stuff. Seems like a cool guy, but it's so funny now that he really knows it's his chance. Tomorrow morning on the Martha Stewart show, they have Forrest Whitaker cooking cookies with Martha Stewart. So, you know, he's really playing it as best he can. The other one that Peter O'Toole is definitely playing those games to win, but it's like it's his eighth nomination. And by all accounts, he did a really good job, but apparently the movie's not all that great. And I've heard amazing things about Ryan Gosling in Half Nelson. I just don't think anybody has seen that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, so. Okay, so the next one is Best Actress, Meryl Streep, Devil Wears Prada, Helen Mirren, The Queen, Judi Dench, Notes on a Scandal, Penelope Cruz on Volver, and Kate Winslet in Little Children. And boy, if there's the one lock everybody's talking about,
it's Helen Mirren.
It's Helen Mirren. I don't understand why there's locks or anything. I haven't seen the movie. Apparently it's great, but sometimes I just wonder, why is it absolutely for certain somebody is a lock in something? I don't know. She's a great actress, and I imagine she's great in this movie. I thought it was cool that Meryl Streep got nominated again, because I remember watching Devil Wears Prada thinking, walking out of there thinking, that was a fun movie. It was pretty good. And dang, Meryl Streep is just so good at whatever she wants to do. I mean, yep, she's never bad.
Very true.
Supporting actor, well, actor and actress, we'll go through these quickly. Mark Wahlberg. That was kind of a surprise and cool.
Yeah.
He was good in that movie. It's hard to remember that. Just 5 years ago, people are going, Mark Wahlberg's trying to act or whatever, and it's like, he was great. Eddie Murphy, that's cool.
Which, is that the Dreamgirls? You know, and the one complaint I heard about, one of the complaints I heard about Dreamgirls is there wasn't enough Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
That his character was underwritten or was written out too early or something like that.
I heard the same thing. The two lead characters, which is Beyonce and Jamie Foxx, were the least interesting, and they should have focused more on Eddie Murphy and that other gal. Alan Arkin? For Little Miss Sunshine?
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Wasn't he great in that movie, too?
I did not realize that.
Yep.
You know, and it's interesting because his role, he's got maybe one... He's got like three really good scenes.
Yep.
Two really, really good scenes in my mind. The brief one... Well, shoot. Now I keep thinking up more. I'm an idiot, but... To me, the one where he's in the van and he's, you know, reassuring his son, Greg Kinnear, that was an amazing scene.
Yep.
The earlier funny scene where he's talking to the kid about getting the young stuff.
Yeah.
And then when he's encouraging the kid, Little Miss Sunshine, a little bit later on, but it's, you know, it sort of harkens back in my mind to Judi Dench with the. You know, the 7 minutes of screen time and earning the Oscar for Shakespeare in Love.
Yeah.
And although Alan Arkin's in this movie more, the scenes that are really his, there really aren't that many.
Yeah. No,
but
I agree.
He does such an incredible job with them.
Yeah. He was great, and he didn't steal on the movie because everybody was so great.
Right.
That was what was so cool. In another movie, it would have been overwhelming.
So go on.
Diamond Hunsu for Blood Diamond and Jackie Earl Haley. For Little Children, Jackie Earl Haley, who people that remember Bad News Bears, he was Kelly Leak, the bad kid from town that was their star in the thing, and he was also in Breaking Away, one of the great movies of all time, as one of the bicycle kids, the cutters from town, and he hasn't been in movies for like 20 years hardly, and he got brought back to do this movie, and also I think he was in that horrible All the King's Men movie. And apparently he's just great. He plays like a released child molester in this movie. But apparently it's great. And I just love stories like that where a guy has not been part of Hollywood at all. He's been like working construction, whatever. And he comes back and just destroys. Haven't seen the movie yet, though. Jennifer Hudson in Dreamgirls, the odds-on favorite.
Yeah. We're into Best Supporting Actress now, I would
Abigail
assume.
Breslin for Little Miss Sunshine. You know, there's this ad for like some... photo paper or something, and it shows this little girl throwing pictures in the air and talking about the importance of color. I go, God, that looks like the girl from Little Miss Sunshine, but and then I realized later, but she's not really chubby. And then I realized, oh, she's like, I guess that was like baby fat or something in that movie because she's not chubby in this ad. It was kind of funny. Rinko Kikuchi for Bobble. I haven't seen it yet. Adrian Barraza for Bobble, another one. Adriana, I've never seen. And Kate Blanchett again for Notes on a Scandal. This is one of those movies that sort of you see get made to win Oscar nominations, but you never friggin' hear about. And I've seen like little posters. I know nothing about it. And that's basically it.
Do you have all the categories there?
Yeah, I got screenplay.
Bust out the, yes. Well,
okay. So there's the two screenplays ones, original screenplay, which is Little Miss Sunshine, The Queen, Bobble, Pan's Labyrinth, Letters from Iwo Jima, And it's interesting with Little Miss Sunshine particularly, because I got the DVD and I was listening to the writer, and it's interesting to hear his arc and how the movie was changed because it got picked up by a major studio for a bit, then went back, and he was trying to direct it himself and other stuff. And it was interesting to see, hear how much the movie changed and how much he admits the actors brought to this movie. Cool. But in terms of the adapted screenplay, that's the best one because it has Borat in there. And it's like, this is a movie that mostly is largely improvised. And when they're saying adapted, what are they saying it's adapted from?
They're saying it's adapted from the Ali G Show.
Okay, so that's just bizarre. I guess it's like a character. Who knows, but it's awesome it got nominated. A lot of people are suggesting he was going to get nominated for Best Actor, but this is the Academy after all. The Departed, Children of Men, Notes on a Scandal, and Little Children. And who knows who's going to win that, but I hope it's Borat because Sacha Cohen was so dang funny at his acceptance speech.
I still haven't seen that. You sent me the YouTube.
I know,
link
they pulled it off
pulled.
Immediately. It was so funny. And him talking about his testes and thanking his co-star. It was funny, and hopefully he'll do something there. So there's Best Editing, Cinematography. Here's Cinematography, The Prestige, The Illusionist, Children of Men, Black Dahlia, and Pan's Labyrinth. And of the two I saw, they're stunning. But boy, just given the technical limitations of Children of Men, I would just hope that would win. And I'm somewhat surprised United 93 wasn't nominated because people talk about that style of filmmaking, like you just jerk cameras around everything else. That was very, very well done. And just because it's of a style that people expect doesn't mean it wasn't uniquely well shot. So that's basically it.
Can you jump down to visual effects?
Okay, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Which, the pirates looked amazing.
They're stunning. Superman Returns and Poseidon. And I haven't seen Poseidon yet. So, still haven't seen it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, I mean, it's the DVD's out there. It just drives me nuts. There's no commentary track, but I'll probably pick the dang thing up.
That's rough. Those were all very well done.
Of the ones I saw, I would definitely... I loved the plane sequence in Superman, but I'd definitely say Pirates of the Caribean.
Yeah, I would...
Even though it's a horrible movie, I mean, I just... Those characters, I mean, I just found them to be unique and incredible.
To me, the thing about the plane scene, which was pretty well done in Superman,
when
he caught it by its nose cone, the nose cone of a plane is basically hollow. It's where the radar sits, and there's no structure there for like a couple of feet.
Yeah.
And I would like to have seen, you know, the actual physics of Superman trying to stop a plane with like pinch points. He can only use two hands, really. How do you stop a plane with two pinch points without it buckling? I would like to have seen that addressed a little more. Anyway, that's...
And then a couple other ones. Best Foreign Language Movie, Pan's Labyrinth, Water, Days of Glory from Algeria, After the Wedding from Denmark, and then The Lives of Others from Germany, which I am so stoked to see if it ever plays here. But just knowing... I mean, you never know with the foreign language one... But everybody's surprised Volver didn't get nominated because, my God, does the Academy love Pedro Almodovar. But I kind of suspect Pan's Labyrinth will win. It got nominated for a bunch, and it's just a friggin' great movie. Best Documentary, An Inconvenient Truth. Cool. Jesus Camp, which I didn't actually like all that much.
Really?
I thought it was... Yeah, I just thought they screwed up.
Huh.
They had this great profile of this lady and all this other stuff, and they did not trust the audience. They simply said, we think if we don't have some talking head up here explaining why this woman's nuts, people are going to come away thinking we agree with this woman. So they hired some guy from Air America Radio to every 50 minutes come on and talk about the dangers of this kind of thinking, and every time he came on, it just instantly deflated the movie for me. Instantly.
Okay.
Deliver Us from Evil. That's the one about the kids that were molested by a... actually, girls, for once, molested by a Catholic priest.
Hmm.
Iraq in Fragments, a Seattle filmmaker who did, on his own, basically did an entirely on his own documentary about Iraq. And and then one called My Country, My Country... which I know nothing about. The one thing I like about this about the Best Documentary thing is it gives exposure to a lot of movies that might not get it. So this Iraq in Fragments has made a grand total of $75,000. Probably he spent more to make the movie. But now, when they release the DVD, he can slap on there, nominated for an Oscar, and he can, and it will guarantee to get him into Blockbuster and other things, and I think that's really cool. So that's basically it. Any other categories?
No, that's... Although, apparently...
I'm looking forward to it. I love the Oscars.
Who's hosting this year?
Is it Ellen DeGeneres, I think? She can be funny.
Maybe that's it. Stewart made a joke about how... he said, something happens every year. You mean the Oscars happen every year? That's not what they told me! And then I'm flipping through this Rolling Stone, and I saw that I was reminded that Rich Little is hosting the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And it's... Clearly, they didn't want Colbert back because he did such an amazing job of lacerating the White House press corps last year and, to a somewhat lesser extent, Bush and the administration. And Colbert's response to that was, I don't know what the big deal was. I went on there and did the same types of jokes I'd been doing for 6 months. It wasn't a shock. But now, by them hiring Rich Little as opposed to someone you've heard of in the past couple of years,
anybody,
all they've done is draw attention to the fact that they didn't hire Stephen Colbert. If they'd gotten almost anyone else,
even like Dennis Miller, who's turned into a conservative, you would have at least said, okay, now we see they're trying to balance.
Or you've got any other name comedian now. Yeah. I mean, certainly Seinfeld, who's been around longer, or Jim Gaffigan, or Greg Giraldo, or Louis Black, who they probably wouldn't do him because he's pretty out there with his anti-Republican comedy. But anybody else, and they'd say, oh yeah, Stephen Colbert hosted last year and blah 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 blah. But now with them doing Rich Little, the story is about Stephen Colbert and last year's dinner. Well, they're doing is bringing it up again.
The first part of the story is Rich Little still alive? And the second part is oh my god. I mean, literally, Rich Little, I can't think of a thing that I remember him in since the 70s. I remember in the 70s and maybe early 80s, you would see him on The Tonight Show or other things doing his impressions. I can't, and it was funny on his on the New Yorker, they did a little profile of him, and they talked about, like, on his website, you know, he's like the man of 1,000 impressions, and they listed like a bunch of his impressions, and like 400 of them are people that are dead, people that have died, like Eisenhower and other ones. Like, who in their right mind would even know whether he's doing a good Eisenhower impression? So it's, I don't know. It was kind of, I mean, for one reason only, it a little bit re-highlights Rich Little, who's been around for a long time, but other than that, it's just embarrassing. Okay, what's up next, dude?
Let's do the feature of today's show, which is the celebration of Richard's DVD collection.
So I've been thinking about my DVDs.
So hold on, you've got where are the new?
It's
nine?
That stack right there. Go ahead
hold
and grab
on.
It.
Which stack?
The one on the bottom. Go ahead and grab it, dude.
With the Little Miss Sunshine on top.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So I started buying.
You said nine. That's like five.
No, it's like five.
I thought you said in your email you said you had nine new DVDs.
Oh no, there's I think it's six, and I can tell you which ones there, but anyway, I started buying DVDs when I got my back in, I think it was like 98, and I started working at Paws, and I had to start using a PC at work, and I thought, oh hell, I might as well get a new computer, because I had this old Mac that was slow and underpowered, and I remember how awful that was, the idea of not getting another Mac. But when I got this new one, suddenly it was from Gateway, and I could get a DVD player. So my very first DVD was American Graffiti, and I remember watching it, and it was so detailed, and then it had the surround sound, and it just blew me away. And I remember at one point, I think it may have been when I went off to Europe, and I had like 25 of them, and I think I loaned them all to you.
No, you had more than that. It was more like 30 or 35. Yeah, you went off to Europe for how long was that? Seven weeks. More? Oh, okay. And
the promise was if I died or didn't come back, you got to keep them all.
Yeah, and that was, I remember they came over in like a big shopping bag, a big brown shopping bag. Because I remember living in, that was the Bellevue apartment, and I had them all lined up, and there was one long stack of those I had yet to see and those I had seen going through, and that was pretty interesting. I definitely saw some stuff I wouldn't have seen. I saw Das Boot for the first time in years and really enjoyed that, and I remember going back and forth trying to decide whether the horrible dubbed version or the subtitles, and I think I went with the subtitles finally, and watching like The Sorcerer. And watching that whole thing and going, I don't get it.
Sorcerer
what the
being
hell
one of,
was that?
One of my top 10 favorite movies of all time.
I don't get that movie.
That one, and it's a horrible version of it. It's a pan and scan, and it's terrible, and it's one of those ones that screams out for a special edition, especially the scene across the raging river with a cool surround sound mix, which they don't have. But
anyway. So
I got all those, and it expanded over time, and it got to the point where I could obviously no longer keep it in a garbage bag, and I just kept buying them. And it's funny because at the first ones, they were all new. Every one I paid an average of $20-$25 for, and then after time, around like 2001 or so, Blockbuster and others started selling used DVDs, and it got to the point where my average one became $8 or $9, and then it got to the point where I wouldn't buy new ones except for in very rare circumstances. So my buying habits changed. So before, they were all very individual purchases of movies I definitely wanted, to later me picking up more mainstream ones. Suddenly I'll have an Austin Powers, which I would have never purchased otherwise. So my whole thing ran the gamut. So what I was thinking about doing today was I bought like six movies that sort of run the gamut between the types of movies I own. I thought maybe we could pick one that was representative.
There's a few more to it, though. You have cataloged all of them. You have put them in a computer program.
Yep.
And in fact, once you put them in the computer program, there's a website.
Yep.
And I've got a bookmark, so I
As soon as I actually put together like our website, I'll have it linked on there, so you can always see them and what's on there.
And you also printed out like inventory stickers, like a library would do, like a Dewey Decimal System, and they've got a picture of your face.
Yep.
And then a three-digit number.
Yep.
And
soon to be four-digit number.
And that's part of the celebration, is that in theory you have exceeded 1,000 DVDs now. That your inventory system tells you are over 1,000.
This is correct.
Now, I'm looking at a floor-to-ceiling bookcase, which is probably 5 feet wide, 6 feet wide.
Yeah, and that's only two-thirds of it.
Right. And so it's 8 shelves full of DVDs. Next to it, there's a stack probably about 4 feet high of DVDs. And then I know in your back bedroom
there's
about
18 more feet in there.
You've got... So it's insane. So every time I'm over here, I try and think, is there anything I need to borrow? Because the benefit of having a friend with 1,000 DVDs is you don't need to rent DVDs on your own.
As long as your friend has a broad enough idea of what goes into a good
and
movie.
And fortunately, I have to say, my Xbox 360 does a much better job of reading scratched discs than my old DVD player. Yeah. I borrowed 40-year-old Virgin from you a couple of weeks ago. Well, I'm watching it with my wife. We get about halfway through, and it grinds to a halt.
Ugh.
It scratched up so badly, and we had to stop watching it.
Wow,
we had to stop watching the movie in the middle of it, and we hate doing that. We're total completists. But then I got the 360 back, and we tried watching it again last night. No problems whatsoever.
Oh, good.
So
I guess it's just Xbox games that it doesn't play very well that are scratched.
So you have a tremendous variety of movies, of films, of TV shows. You have everything, basically. Let me give you a sampling of what I can see. You've got The Shield first season. You've got Moulin Rouge, Reservoir Dogs, Seven, Toy Story box set, The Man Who Knew Too Much, Stanley Kubrick 6 or 7 disc.
That's The Man Who Knew Too Much? Oh, no. That's
Man Who Wasn't There.
Man
Sorry.
Who Wasn't There. Yeah.
You've got The French Connection. You've got
French Connection 2.
The Simpsons. You've got Antoine Fisher. You've got King of the Hill, Futurama, The Aliens Quadrilogy, Donnie Darko, SWAT, Spellbound, Shattered Glass, The Cooler, The Navigator, Blue Crush, In Like Flint, The Sweet Hereafter, Nurse Betty, Time Code. And then you've got all these weird films like that would either be incredibly obscure.
Most are weird, like Manderley.
Tulane Blacktop.
Oh, that's a great movie.
Romance. Zero Effect. Safe. Anatomy.
Zero Effect is a great movie. Safe, what a great
Joseph
movie.
Joseph Sarno's Inga. The Legend of Rita.
German movie. Softcore porn movie from the 60s.
CQ.
That's a great movie. That's directed by Roman Coppola. Here's the thing, Matt. What's kind of sad is at Yo this Jimbo, point...
Bring it on. Rio Jimbo right next to Bring It On.
Yep. Well, at this point now, there's probably... Of all my movies, there's probably at least 50 I haven't seen yet, well, which is something I never wanted to do, where I was buying them and not buying new ones until I'd seen them. But there's a whole host of them down there that I've purchased, definitely want to see, haven't gotten my mind around to see. Some of them for certain reasons, like The Passion of the Christ. I know I want to see it. I know I wanted to buy it, but I just haven't quite gotten in the mood to get ticked off. And other ones I just like, they're just sitting there, like Manderley or a whole variety of foreign movies, because I love foreign movies. At least 15% of my movies yep. are foreign movies, and that's what I was thinking for my 100th movie. It probably should be a foreign movie, but I didn't buy a foreign movie, so it's got to be something else.
So you have your six latest purchases here.
And then the one that's not on there is The Simpsons Season 9.
Okay.
It's another new one.
So you've got An Inconvenient Truth,
mm-hmm.
Glory Road,
yep.
Little Miss Sunshine, Miami Vice, Talladega Nights, and Clerks 2.
And which are all pretty mainstream choices.
Yes, they are.
But of all those, which do you think would be the most representative of my collection?
So that's what you want, is representative of
your collection? Well, as best as possible.
Little Miss Sunshine.
I would totally agree.
That's
for a couple of reasons. One, it's a great movie. It's an independent movie that is also a popular movie. Two, the DVD has two commentary tracks on it, and that's important to me. And three, it has not much, but it has four alternate endings on it that was interesting and fun, and that's my kind of movie. If the movie had no commentary track, which is the rare DVD I have, would not have been a good candidate.
Yep.
So the other ones, I mean, maybe The Simpsons would be a good candidate because that's one of the few series that I've bought and bought and bought again. So I've now got 9 seasons of The Simpsons.
Yep.
But, you know, whatever. Okay, so it's decided. Little Miss Sunshine will go up as my 1,000th DVD purchase. And technically, I'm probably at right now at about 1,012 because there's some that aren't in the system that I can't add. Because for whatever reason, somebody hasn't added them, and I haven't figured out myself how to add them to the whole thing. But
it's fascinating.
Well, as I mentioned last week, it's like sort of increasingly irrelevant because what's happening is the standards and with high def and everything is sort of making this stuff be pushed to the back burner of what people are expecting. But the problem is there's not an actual direct replacement because HD DVDs are sort of sounds like they may not ultimately replace it as people move to other ways to get high quality entertainment, which is depressing to me because I love commentaries.
I have a couple of follow-up things. One, which you just reminded me of, that combo player that LG introduced mm-hmm. at CES a couple weeks ago,
yep.
I am told, or I read, actually doesn't support the interactive features of I think it was HD DVD.
Then what the hell is the point?
Exactly. So there was that. And then there was another... Oh, as we were talking about the iPhone last week,
yeah.
You know, one aspect of that whole thing that we completely failed to touch on was not knowing what the per-month charges will be.
Oh, yeah.
What will the data rate be, and are they working to improve the speed of their network? Because a few things that immediately everyone pointed out, even during the keynote, was yeah. Singular's quote-unquote 3G network is the slowest of the U.S. carriers. All the stuff that Steve was showing on stage was all using Wi-Fi.
Yep.
So if you have Wi-Fi in your house or you have access to it, it can go, in theory, that fast.
Yep.
If you need to do all of that over the cellular network,
yep.
A, what will it cost, and B, how fast will it be?
It'll cost a fortune, and it'll be like going back to modems 15 years ago.
And then somebody added up, if you took Singular's existing plan, data plan, which I think it's like an extra $20 for a flat rate all you can download, which...
Yep.
I don't know what the likelihood is they keep that model or right. they introduce a new expanded plan
yep.
to screw you some more. But if you bought the $800 iPhone and then like the $60 or $70 or $80 a month it would cost, what it would cost for 2 years of ownership.
Yeah.
It was like $2,000 or something. It was just a really depressing number just to see it. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. It sort of reminded me, I was listening on the radio the other day on, and I was listening to Howard Stern, as you know, I listen to like 24 hours a day, and they were playing an old show where he had there was a guy who literally a guy was committing suicide off a bridge and wants to call and calls Howard Stern. This is totally legitimate in the mid or early 90s. And Howard Stern kept him on the phone long enough for somebody to come rescue him. And then the rest of the day, he's holding a press conference talking about how he saved the guy's life in his mock, you know, I'm the most important guy in the world. But anyway, the thing that struck me about it was when the guy called, they're going, wow, you're calling from a portable cellular phone. Wow, you can afford the minutes. Well, I guess if you're not going to pay for it and all this other stuff. And the entire context was how unbelievably expensive, and we forget how unbelievably expensive cell phone coverage used to be. It used to be yep. like $1 or $2 a minute. And for half an hour, you're talking about a $70 phone call. And that's what these data networks are like, which it's completely baloney. There's no reason they need to charge that much, but they just can because they know you don't have many options.
You know, if WiMAX or ultra wideband.
Yep.
Is ultra wideband one of the,
I don't know. Wireless? I know WiMAX, that's the city based version.
Well, WiMAX is one of the ways to accomplish essentially wireless broadband.
Yeah.
And Clearwire is the biggest name right now because they just rolled out their whole marketing and let's get going campaign.
Yep.
A friend of mine was interviewing to work for them. It sounded really interesting, but he did not. But something like WiMAX completely disrupts the cell companies because then you can have a VoIP phone.
Yep.
Or then you can have the Cisco
iPhone.
Something that takes advantage, which is a VoIP phone. Yeah. You could have something that takes advantage of the internet instead of the cell networks. That's got to be scary for them.
Yep.
Because you're right. I think once that happens, people will realize how much they loathe the cell phone coverage.
Absolutely.
And being restricted to all of this. And yep. once they realize what they can do outside of the shackles of that, it will yep. be the same thing of people looking at the iPhone UI and realizing how crappy, how much they hate everything else.
Yep. I agree. I totally agree.
You know, I read an article in the latest Wired about Juiced.
I didn't read
about this.
I got the latest Wired. I just haven't read that yet.
Basically, it's the two guys who founded Kazaa and Skype
yep.
are now working on a TV delivery system where it's all peer-to-peer, but at the same time, it's encrypted, it's legal, and it's free. And the way and the
advertiser supported
the
or?
Secret sauce is the way it does the advertising. It's hyper-targeted.
Yeah.
So that they can do, you know, any, you know,
so they
young
on the
males
fly
that watch
send
Battlestar Galactica, which is probably most of them anyway, you can specifically target that. Or the first time somebody has watched something in a week, they can sell that as an advertising okay. block. But because it's hyper targeted, and they can, in theory, charge enough for that, it's like 30 or 60 seconds per hour.
Yeah.
So you don't have advertising all over the place or 5 minutes of advertising in the beginning, you've got 30 or 60 seconds of advertising at the beginning of a show. And to me, that's wonderful.
Oh, absolutely.
I am willing to watch ads to see free TV.
Oh,
totally
I am too.
Totally willing to.
I am too. That's how I watched most of when I missed when the first run of Studio 3 or Studio 60 was on. I forgot about it and I would turn and watch it on the thing and you'd have to sit through basically a 15 second ad at the beginning of every station break. And I was fine with that. They clearly were just trying to sell it because it was always the same ad over and over again. But I don't know. I was fine with that. The problem is it will ultimately probably end up being just like regular TV where it becomes 15 minutes worth of ads. Because I guarantee you if there's nothing holding them back from putting more ads on, the only thing holding them back is viewer migration, because that's what it is with current TV ads. What is going to stop them from not trying to continually sell more ads other than the breaking point? So that's what concerns me.
They're segregating themselves from YouTube and Google TV by saying this one doesn't have a crippling bandwidth bill.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I know that Leopard is supposed to have, the Leopard being the new Mac OS, is supposed to have a built-in peer-to-peer thing.
Yeah.
And how whether that's tied into iTunes or not, I don't know. But that could be disruptive as well.
Well, you know, it's funny. Speaking of that, iTunes, I think I sent you an email that this past week, NBC Nightly News and Meet the Press are now being put on iTunes, which is cool because I love watching the news and watching the others. I love having access to that as iTunes to watch it when I want. But it was funny because once they went online, my God, is it slow? It's clearly a lot of people signed up for that. And because it's not peer-to-peer, it's this straight, we're just taking it from their big servers, it got cripplingly slow after a while. It was the slowest download I had going on. It took like an hour to download Meet the Press, which should have just taken about 3 or 4 minutes.
I'm still okay with getting my news through the Daily Show. You know, and they were making fun of Cheney's latest interview with Wolf Blitzer, which I read the transcript of.
Yeah. The one where he started asking about his lesbian daughter again or something. Or
yeah, like, how dare you? And then Wolf Blitzer says nothing. And Jon Stewart says, gee, I don't know. You're the party that's criminalizing homosexual and lesbian behavior. How dare you?
Yeah.
You know, Stewart's... And clearly it's easier to do when you're talking to an audience instead of having the vice president right across from you. As Stewart himself has said, he's a complete nutter. Puss.
That said, no, he's had an audience with him when he's doing interviews. But when he's doing interviews he's been pretty proactive.
He can be, but he can also be just as light and fluffy as the other guys, and he knows it, and he doesn't pretend to be anything else.
Yeah, I agree.
But at the same time, you know, no one else is showing videotape of the contradictory statements.
Yeah.
You know, every so often the mainstream media tries to challenge something and they get swatted down with this bluster and they never raise their heads again.
Yeah.
And Stewart is the one, the Daily Show, are the only ones out there saying, here's what you said a year ago. Here's what you said 2 years ago. Here's what you said 3 years ago. Here's you saying the opposite now and saying you never said those other things.
Yeah, and that's total prototypical Cheney. But I thought there was something recently where a lot of the mainstream media finally did. The Barack Obama. Oh, man, that was so sweet finally. Because the minute Obama announced, quietly, I couldn't believe every single person I knew that had any conservative leaning started quietly, without explaining anything, talking about his Muslim background, the madrasas, wait till all this comes out. And all of a sudden they're talking about it. It was clear there was this unbelievable whisper campaign. And then finally Fox News or somebody comes right out and says that, oh, he quietly went to this madras and nobody knows about it. Something that was in his biography that sold like a million copies. And then who was it? NBC or CNN to their credit?
CNN.
Yeah, they went out there immediately and completely destroyed that. Completely. And said, at age 6, he went to this unbelievably proactive school that has women and men teaching together, wearing jeans. It was insanity. And it was like, wow, where was this when John Kerry was being accused of being a wimp and you know, a hero from Vietnam? It was really impressive. It was the first time they'd ever done that, near as I could tell.
Well, and you're right. And it caught the attention of a lot of bloggers, because I read a lot of lefty political blogs.
Yep.
What was the other thing? I thought that was, God, my short-term memory is just shot to heck.
You start smoking the weed, dude.
Yeah, that's my problem.
That's my problem.
But, yeah, showing the videotape and being able to say, no, you're wrong. I mean, and that's fundamentally, that's why The Daily Show is so popular. They're funny, but, people have a hunger for, I don't want to say for the truth, that sounds a little preachy, but... You know, they can smell the difference between a fluffy interview and The Daily Show.
Yeah.
And The Daily Show presenting the videotape and saying, here's when he said this, here's when he said that, here's why it's incredibly retarded, and it's okay to laugh at these other idiots for buying it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I was going to say, the other thing The Daily Show is so good at when they're showing the videotape is the uniformity of the right-wing talking points.
Yep.
When the memo goes out in the morning saying, here's the phrase to use, and I can't remember the last one they did, but you know, today's phrase is, you know, green beans off a plate. And then they show 5 separate instances of Dan Bartlett, Vice President Cheney, Condi Rice, of Stephen Hadley, the current National Security Advisor. They all use that phrase. It's green beans off a plate. And they run them all in succession. And you realize how orchestrated the message machine
is. And what's funny is there, because of the right-wing message machine, which has basically been derailed lately, but
it's more there's more of a light shining on it now than there has been.
But what's interesting about it is a lot of the left wingers would get so upset because it's so clearly coordinated. And the funny thing was, is it actually isn't. People sort of like a cell in a terrorist cell where they know the overall structure, how they're supposed to operate. They don't need somebody to tell them exactly what to do. They'd go, okay, here's the message. Nobody needs to directly say, and it allows a lot of deniability on the upper echelons of Republicans. They know we just need to release this, and it will filter down to the smallest of minions who know. They don't need to be told. They just know this is the language they need to use, yep. Which is funny because sometimes you'll hear the Daily Show will point out, and they'll show some real minion doing it who flubs it because they haven't really gotten it straight. They'll just keep repeating the phrase, but they actually flub the phrase because they don't have it built in as well as Condi Rice or somebody says. But anyway.
No, you're exactly right. All right, our new feature,
yep,
which I had the idea for this week, is called Please Stop.
So explain your feature.
I'll just do it, and I think it will be self-explanatory.
And then I have one I wanted to add. It took me a while to think of one. But...
See, to me, it might be one of those things where you go through everything you want to say in the first couple episodes, and then you're dry.
Okay,
you go like, right the ahead. Daily Show doesn't do Seat of Heat anymore.
Yeah, that's true. I noticed that.
That died a quick death. So, please stop doing any sort of commercial with people quoting movies. Usually it's radio ads. Please stop. It's horrible. Last year there was some campaign... and for the love of God, I can't remember what it was, that was horrible. You had all these people quoting different things, and it was some sort of contest, and you'd have old people, and it might have been centered around Greece.
Yeah.
Because I remember there'd be like, you know, old people saying, you know, show me what you got, stud, or something like that, and it was so awkward.
Invariably, the kinds of people that quote movies hate ads where they would have somebody quoting a movie in them. Why piss off the very people that you're, you know,
well, there's
ostensibly
some new
trying
there's
to go
some
for?
New radio campaign. It's an Oscars contest. You know, drink our cola, or I don't even know what the hell the product is. Do our whatever, and you can win a trip to the Oscars. And they've got people quoting movie lines. Yeah. And it's just, it's so awkward. Because
go ahead and make my day.
Yeah. Oh, God, and they're horrible. I'll be back. And it's just, you know, I love to quote movies. Yeah. My buddy John loves to quote movies. You're not quite as vocal about it.
I'm not as good at it. I'm a visually oriented person, so I screw up on the quotes. You'll sit here and rattle off entire scenes from like The Big Lebowski. You and I have seen that over 100 times, but I can't. I screw up immediately because I'm not auditorially oriented. I am visually oriented, so it's harder for me to do.
Yeah,
that said, I love them. I like when you do it.
Yeah, and that is my skill. Yep. If I could make money at that somehow, I would be a gazillionaire.
Yep.
You know, I would, you know, Simpsons quotes. If I can make money doing Simpsons quotes, that's it. I'm done. Sadly, anything involving that skill would probably involve L.A., and I hate L.A.
Yep.
But that being said, even though I like movie quotes, I don't think recording them is a good idea. That's just dumb. Nobody wants to hear me reciting Simpsons quotes. It's ridiculous.
Exactly.
When you bring it up and it's kind of funny in a conversation, that's it. That's about all it's good for. But it's so awkward, and almost nothing makes me want to change the channel more than that.
So what's your next Please Stop, dude? We're beating this one to death. We're making it. What's your next one? I think you had one there that was.
Oh, I had like three that were listed. I think my snarky one was, yes, Jack Bauer is back. We effing get it already. Please stop.
I like that one. It's like, holy good Lord. It's when you're seeing...
you talk about a talking points onslaught.
Oh, I know. And it's like national commentators are talking about this because of how it plays out with our strategy on torture. I'm like, what the hell? I like 24, but just give it a rest.
Actually, the worst one was, I think it was one of the football games, one of the playoff games last week. I guess it would have had to been the NFC one, because they did the most awkward segue from, I think, the jersey number of 24 into pitching 24 on the network.
Oh, good Lord.
It was so... And I have sympathy for the broadcasters that are given these cards. They're given these cards and said, you need to read all of these by the end of the broadcast. And a certain number of them are pimping the network's shows.
Yeah.
I have some sympathy for that because it's not like they want to do it. They have to do it, but it's just so awkward.
Yeah.
Please stop.
Okay, here's the one. I need to figure out how I would say it, but it's an open message to our friends at Kia Corporation of America. With your ads that feature the Aviator Zane song from Sound of Music.
Oh, Kia. I thought you said IKEA.
No, Kia. With the Aviator Zane song from A Sound of Music, Long Farewell.
Yes.
Yeah, we get it. We get it that you're a utilitarian company, so they're all wearing little not aggressive, you know, business suits, and you sell cars at a cheap price. But if I hear that song one more time, I'm going to throw my frickin' shoe through my screen. It is killing me.
I
don't want to hear it. Please stop.
I agree.
Oh.
You know... It ties into a larger, I mean, obviously a lot of these are going to be bad marketing / advertising rants on our part. You know, how hard can it be to make a commercial that isn't horrible? Ugh. I understand it's hard to make them really compelling and interesting. The Mac ads. If there's a new Mac ad, I will rewind my system to watch it.
Yep.
That is advertising nirvana. When you have somebody doing, like when you bitched about that Nissan Titan commercial with the Iron Man song.
Oh, yeah.
Where that's the whole point is they're watching a truck commercial instead of the football game, which of course is horse pucky. But there I am doing it with the Apple ad.
Yeah, but if Apple ever did an ad, a Meta ad,
yeah,
where it looks like the tail end, then all of a sudden... you hear a voiceover, that was cool, let's back it up, watch it again.
That would be, yeah,
you could
absolutely
probably never watch one of those ads again.
You're
You'd
exactly
be so
right.
frustrated. And that's what Nissan didn't get, because the Nissan ad was kind of cool, and they instantly ruined it with that other effort.
Well, it's just, God, for all the money that is spent on advertising, can't it be good?
Yeah.
Well, you know, if the ads are funny or compelling, I will watch them. I am happy to watch the ad that supports me watching free TV.
Yep.
Well, quote unquote free TV. My Dish bill is like $80 a month, but
yep.
I'm fine with that. It's just the bad ads I don't want to see, and most of them are bad, so I skip them and don't feel bad about it at all.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
So all right.
I thought you had a final please stop.
Oh, those are just samples. Oh,
okay. Well, they're good. I like them. We can try it. It took me a while. When you wrote them, I thought, those are funny, and then I had to think long and hard to come up with one.
Actually, the other one was something we have both complained about before. Please stop telling me what America's truck is. Yeah. I know what America's truck is.
It would be Toyota.
No.
No, I know. It's not. I'm joking.
Granted, the 24 thing and that stupid Mellencamp song will dwindle as football ends.
Yeah.
You know, that now that I'm not watching football games anymore, the repetition will end.
Yeah.
So actually, yeah, next week after next, we'll have the Super Bowl to talk about with the Super Bowl commercials.
Yay.
Everybody makes such a big deal. I watched the Super Bowl for the commercials, not the game. Oh.
Well, isn't it two different companies have decided to let people make their own commercials and they're going to have the winner there or something?
Really?
Well, yeah. And if I was like the first company that planned that, I'd be really ticked off that the one dumb idea they had, somebody else is doing the same exact idea. But who knows? Commercials are fun. But yeah, but that really jumped the shark a couple of years ago when the commercials themselves are such a big deal that they'd have shows about the commercials. And at a certain point, you're going, I get why they're doing that. But it's like, you are, you know, it's not appropriate. It's ridiculous that you're highlighting things that are designed to sell us a product.
But, and we should keep a little ticker of how many jokes there will be about the length of the pregame show.
Oh, yeah.
Like, has the pregame show started yet? It's only a week in advance.
Yep.
And
yep.
It's like, people don't understand, or maybe they do understand, but they don't realize the only reason the pregame show is that long is because idiots are willing to watch it, or they've convinced advertisers that
yep.
people will watch it.
Let's put it this way. On a Sunday morning, like, you watch the average national thing at like 9 o'clock on Sunday morning, if it's not sports, gets like about 500,000 viewers. All they have to do, even if it's 7 hours for the Super Bowl, if they slap the words pregame show on it, it will get 15 million viewers.
And the only reason it's 7 hours before is to support advertising.
Exactly.
Because when I work for a radio station company. I don't work there often. I do fill-in shifts now. I used to work at a different station that did Mariners games.
Yep.
Broadcast the Mariners games as well as the Seahawks games.
Yep.
And I was talking to my buddy who board opt. That's basically controlling the radio broadcast for whatever. It's board opping. He used to board op the Seahawks games. And he said he was talking to, he at one point had talked to a guy who board opt the, I think it was the Tampa Bay games. And he said, you know what? Back in the day, the pregame and the postgame show were about 15 minutes a pop.
Yep.
And then when people realized they could be advertising vehicles, suddenly they're 2 hours, they're 3 hours long.
Yeah.
And if you actually listen to a radio sports pre or post game show, it's all ads with about a minute and a half of content in between.
And people are just sitting there leaving it on.
It's not substantial content. Honestly, listen to it. It's when we come back, we'll have the keys to the game. Here's the Lexus keys to the games. When we come back, we'll have a chat with the manager, hoo-ha. And you come back and there's a 60-second chat with the manager. And then when they come back from a break, they'll talk to a call-in listener who calls in and says, what's up with the team? How come they stink this year? And then they go to a break.
Yep.
It's... there's very little substance in the pregame
show. It was just as long, especially the postgame show, was just as long as necessary so they could end on a half hour or an hour point.
Oh, that's still the... well, yeah, and I can understand that.
But now it's stretched out over like 2 hours. But no, that was why, because they wanted to, you know, our Larry King Live syndicated show's kicking on at 6 o'clock. So if the game ends at 5:45, it'll be 15 minutes. If it ends at 5:25, it'll be 35 minutes.
Yes, that is true. And... The advertising is more true of the pregame than the postgame. Yeah. Postgame's a little looser. Pregame, the only reason it's 3 hours long is to sell ads.
Yeah.
Definitely, definitely, definitely.
Yep.
I had, you know, and what are we doing for length?
It's approaching the longest one ever.
You send that so many times.
We're at 1 hour and 12 minutes and 33 seconds.
Oh, please. We've gone longer.
We've gone 100 or 1 hour, 25 minutes.
There was a bit of radio news this week, and yeah. I don't know if you saw it.
What was the news?
Entercom is doing a station swap in Seattle with a company called Bonneville.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
No.
So basically, they are swapping.
Bonneville is the old people that used to own Cairo radio, yep. Or TV and Cairo Radio.
Yes. So they're doing a swap. Cairo AM, KBSG, and KTTH are going to Bonneville.
Wow. So Cairo's back under the Cairo fold, basically.
Well, no, because Cairo TV is owned by Saga.
Oh, so it's not even owned. Is Bonneville the Mormon church? Aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So, and Entercom gets three stations in San Francisco, so they want it into a larger market. But, so what's interesting...
Is San Francisco larger than the Seattle market?
They're the fifth largest market.
Seattle is
13th.
I thought we were 8. Okay.
It bounces up and down.
Oh, because of San Jose and Oakland and everything.
If you include Guam, it actually affects whether we're 13th or 14th, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, I forgot the whole Bay Area. I was just thinking San Francisco.
Okay. So where that's interesting is you're right. Bonneville used to own Cairo TV, which is our local CBS affiliate.
Yep.
Although at the time, I don't think they were.
They lost that CBS affiliate only like 3 years.
Yeah, that went to KSTW.
But we're talking about they had it for 20 years
They owned a Cairo TV and they owned Cairo. Yep. It's not often that you've got the same call sign letters that are both. And you're right, they're owned by the same company, Bonneville, for years and years. So when I worked at Cairo Radio doing Mariners broadcasts and other things, I don't know if it was a Mariners game or some other show that I was board hopping one night. I got a call from a listener. And she's like, could you please stop showing this? And I said, ma'am, we're discussing whatever the topic is. Would you like to talk to our host about the topic? No, I would like you to stop showing this footage of this. I said, ma'am, do you realize you've called Cairo Radio and not Cairo TV? And she said, you're all the same anyway, and hangs up. Because she couldn't get a hold of anyone at the TV station. She called Cairo Radio to bitch about what she was seeing on the TV station.
Do you blame her? She doesn't know. People don't understand the difference.
Well,
they're both called Cairo. It's a broadcast thing.
I understand it's a little confusing, but oh my God. And these are the types of people you'd have to deal with that call into radio stations.
Yeah.
I'm not going to bitch too much because I've made a decision not to tell any inside dirt stories about my radio experiences, but that wasn't too specific.
Yeah.
All right. So I just thought it was interesting that that has happened.
Yeah, that totally is.
All righty. So I think we're done.
We are.
Maybe next time I will have seen a new movie, but probably
maybe next
not.
Time I'll get this up within a day.
All right. There were no emails to the email address, but if you were to write youguysrock@mustardayonnaise.com, why, we would respond to it. I'm Matt.
I'm Richard.
Thanks for listening.